Always try to let that run out because we don't say hippity hoppity enough on the show.
We don't.
I really feel that we have to include that whenever we have the opportunity.
Absolutely.
Hippity hoppity. One of the highlights of the week is sitting down with our independent bookseller who has hippity hoppitied over to our studio to tell us about some great reads that they want to share with our roundtable listeners. Amy Lane is of Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery in Schenectady, New York. And it's a great pleasure to welcome her back to the proceedings. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I have to say, when you sent your list and I was inserting it into the script last night, I noted that it was something that I think was a rather a rarity. I had not heard of any of the books.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
With the possible exception of the Lego playbook. Everything else I was like, well, I'm also going to ask about the 18 in America. That's the kid who went around. Yeah, he was here from Williamstown, so we did have him on.
Okay.
But other than that,
I'm shocked. I'm nearly speechless because two of them you really need to hear about. This is true for everybody. I'm really staggered. And Sons by David Gilbert, which is like the new novel that is going to be the novel of 2013. And if you haven't heard about it, now's the time. Pay attention. This is going to be a whopper. I think, one moment.
Okay. Amy is now getting Exhibit A, which is the book.
And Sons is actually ampersand and the word sons. And it is getting great reviews, great attention. My good friend Jason Rice actually has a quote in the jacket flap here, which is, "Remember The Imperfectionists," which we all loved, by the way. "This book is like that, but 1,000 times more amazing." Impossible, I know. But And Sons by David Gilbert is the one book you must read if you read a book in 2013. And he's absolutely right. This is it. It is an engaging, absolutely readable you'll want to take your time with it, but you really won't be able to because it's just going to kind of suck you right in. And it's told by this character named Philip, who is basically, he's what's known as an unreliable narrator, right? So that all of these stories that he weaves, he gets into people's heads, right? He imagines what people are thinking. You can never tell quite whether or not he's telling the truth, whether his observations are clear, whether it's just a longing, a fantasy, because he is sort of an outsider in this family of people and has longed to be more a part of the inside of this family of who... I don't even know how to really go on with this. I'm sort of a little overexcited.
That is fine.
Stimulated
Take
by
a
this.
Deep breath.
Thank you, Joe. And it's a stunning, stunning novel. And I think everybody needs to read this. The premise of the book is that the beginning is this man who is sort of take off on a Salinger type, right? He wrote the great literary novel, Andrew Dyer. And his friend has passed away, Charles Topping, and that's Philip's father. And it starts at the funeral. And it's really kind of interesting because I think Andrew has never really considered himself to be the great novelist that other people laud him to be, and it's just sort of what he does. And he actually steals his eulogy off the internet. It's quite brilliant. So anyway, he's got three sons.
Which, by the way, is tempting. I have to say,
right?
It's very tempting.
Yeah. And so it's of course about fathers and sons and their relationships and their competitions and the way they deal with one another. He's got the three sons, two by his first wife, the third by another woman, and which, you know, of course caused the dissolution of his first marriage. He never married the other woman, but he's really kind of obsessed with his youngest son, and he wants them to be more, and he tries to manipulate, and it's phenomenal. You really, really need to read this. And of course, the book that he wrote, and this goes back to the the title of this. The book that Dyer wrote that was the famous novel is called Ampersand.
Right.
So hence the ampersand at the head of And Sons. And it's, you know, what drives everything. It's fabulous. It's just fabulous. Please, please, everybody, go to your bookstores right now. You know?
Stop what you're doing.
Exactly.
And get a copy.
Write this down. And Sons by David Gilbert. This is not a book to be missed.
Published by Random House, just out in the last week July, and so making the rounds and getting great reviews. So, And Sons by David Gilbert.
And
all
the
right.
Other one that's making rounds that everybody needs to know and read, and I'm not kidding, is called The Sound of Things Falling by Juan Gabriel Vasquez. And it's translated by Anne McLean. And this is a book of Colombia, the drug trade, but not in a way that one would necessarily expect. It's about, I'm going to read you the beginning of this. I wanted to do this anyway, but I love this man's writing. It's really phenomenal. It's beautifully translated. This story pulls you along again, much like the other one, but in a very different tone. And it's that I like so much. This guy's writing is poetic. It's detailed. His descriptions are lush and gorgeous. And writes sort of spot on without being verbose. So here's how the whole thing starts. The first hippopotamus, a male the color of black pearls, weighing a ton and a half, was shot dead in the middle of 2009. He'd escaped 2 years before from Pablo Escobar's old zoo in the Magdalena Valley, and during that time of freedom had destroyed crops, invaded drinking troughs, terrified fishermen, and even attacked the breeding bulls at a cattle ranch. The marksman who finally caught up with him shot him once in the head and again in the heart with a .375 caliber bullet, since hippopotamus skin is so thick. They posed with the dead body, the great dark wrinkled mass, a recently fallen meteorite, and there, in front of the first cameras and onlookers, beneath a ceiba tree that protected them from the harsh sun, explained that the weight of the animal would prevent them from transporting him whole, and they immediately began carving him up. I was in my apartment in Bogota, 250 or so kilometers south, when I saw the image for the first time, printed across half a page of a national news magazine. Excuse me. During the weeks that followed, the memory of Ricardo Laverde went from being a minor coincidence, one of those dirty tricks our mind plays on us, to becoming a faithful and devoted ever-present ghost standing by my bed while I slept, watching from afar in the daylight hours. I began to think stubbornly about the day Ricardo Laverde died, and even to force myself to remember the precise details. I was surprised by how little effort it took me to summon up the words I had spoken or heard, things I'd seen, pain I'd suffered and now overcome. And that's how the story got underway. I don't know what good it does us to remember, what benefits or possible penalties it brings, or how what we've lived through can change when we remember it, but remembering Ricardo Laverde, well, has become an urgent matter for me. I read somewhere that a man should tell his story at the age of 40, and this deadline is fast approaching as I write these lines. Only a few short weeks remain before the ominous birthday arrives. The story of his life. No, I won't tell my life story. Just a few days of it that happened a long time ago. And I'll do so fully aware that this story, as they warn in fairy tales, has happened before and will happen again. That I'm the one who's ended up telling it is almost beside the point. And that is the beginning of this beautiful metaphorical
wow.
story about a man whose friend Ricardo Laverde was shot in the street while he was with him, and he caught a stray bullet in the gut, and Ricardo died. And he has been left wounded and in fear, like living in fear, as so many others in that town of Bogota have lived because of Pablo Escobar and the whole drug cartel of the 80s and that life that affected every single one of them. It's beautiful and amazing, and it really is very rich and complex of how we live in the ways that we do.
Beautiful. I accept that we would upset the guests who are waiting in the green room. I would just let you go and read for another hour and a half.
Thank you.
I wish I could. That was beautiful. So the book, The Sounds of Things Falling, and again, getting great reviews just out last week. So
it is phenomenal.
All right. We have five minutes and a lot of books.
Okay. Well, Vegetation Street by Iva Pechoda, I'm assuming.
Sure,
I'd
go with that.
The pronunciation. This is the first of Dennis Lehane's, imprint over at HarperCollins Echo. So kind of that's all you really need to know, right? Dennis Lehane picked this book. Dennis Lehane wants you to read this book with good reason. It is a gritty, brilliant, brilliant mystery, and it's full of fantastic characters. It takes place in Red Hook, Brooklyn, about these two girls who went off on a raft one day out in the bay, and one was found washed up on shore, barely alive, but survived, and no one knows what happened to the other. So read the book. Find out.
It is Visitation Street by Ivy Pachota.
Okay, so the next one I want is, this is just a really heartwarming memoir of a man and his wife who go dog tripping. 25 rescues, 11 volunteers, and 3 RVs on our canine cross-country adventure. This is David Rosenfeld telling his adventures of rescuing dogs across the country with he and his wife. It's funny, it's sweet. These are fantastic stories. If you're a dog lover, I don't know why you wouldn't want to read this book. It's going to make you laugh. It's at points going to make you kind of weepy. They're a little hard, but it's so much fun. This is an entertaining, light, very fun read. So check out Dog Tripping. Again, if you really are a dog lover, this is the book for you.
By David Rosenfeld.
Yeah, and then we'll get to Dylan Dethier's book, 18 in America. Did you read this one? Have you?
Yes, I did. Yeah. We had the young man in here.
He's like, what a writer.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It's stunning. So yeah, if you haven't read it yet, you really shouldn't. I don't really particularly, I hate golf. I'm sorry. I really hate golf. I don't play. It's one of those things. I don't get it. But he's such an engaging storyteller. His anecdotes, the people that he meets along the way, the way he sort of problem solves his time and travels on the road after leaving for this road trip. He for those who don't know, he put off going to college for a year. He deferred his admissions at Williams to go on this road trip and play golf through the lower 48 states. And it's phenomenal. It's a lot of fun. There are some really great and poignant tales in here and people that he meets. So again, it's really worthwhile, I think, to pick up this book, whether or not you are a fan of golf.
A great read and an awful lot of fun. All right.
All right. How much have we got?
We've got a minute and a half.
Okay. Well, I got to do this. I got to go with The Day the Crayons Quit is my picture book, one of my picture books. It is written by Drew Daywalt. It is illustrated by Oliver Jeffers. It is an absolute treat, a delight. These crayons decide one day that they're going to write to their owner, Duncan, and they all have little complaints, various problems that they see with their roles as whatever color they are in the box of crayons and how they're used, and it's a delight, an absolute
delight. Oh, so they're sort of going on strike, but yes. they're writing appeal letters to Duncan.
Yes. Yes, they are. And it's really quite wonderful. So every crayon has their own sort of style of illustrations. They have their own paper that they write on, their own type of handwriting. It is a brilliantly, brilliantly well done picture book. Check it out. It's perfect.
The bad news is I'm so short and stubby I can't even see over the railing in the crayon box anymore. I need a break. Your very stubby friend, Blue Crayon.
Yes.
Very
that's
nice.
That's just one.
I like it.
You should read about pink. Then there's my other picture book that I like called Hank Finds an Egg. This is a wordless picture book. There are very few of these around, but he is this sweet little problem solver who finds this egg in the woods on a walk, and he sees a nest where the egg belongs, and he does his best to return it
what
to
is,
its
What
home.
Is Hank? Is that a...
He's like a little bear.
Is that a little bear?
It is. These are little photographs. I mean,
very strange-looking animal.
It's really, really beautifully done. I mean, he's this plush little
stuff
felty
animal.
Creature.
Yep.
Yeah.
Could be a monkey?
Maybe. It's hard to say.
Could be a bear.
Could be a bear. But he's whatever he is Hank. And he has a good heart and good intentions, and we like him very much.
Hank Finds an Egg by Rebecca Dudley. For more information on Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery in Schenectady and the great work they do, visit their website, opendoor-bookstore.com. Better yet, visit them on J Street in Schenectady. Amy Lane, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for sharing and for the beautiful reading this morning as well. Nice job.
Thanks for having
Thank
me.
You very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.